Welcome to the T&D podcast brought to you by TomTom. We think you're trucking awesome. You deserve a trucking awesome app. That's why today we're excited to talk about the ultimate trucking companion, TomTom Go Navigation. With premium features designed to make every delivery a breeze, Go Navigation ensures you reach your destination efficiently and stress-free. Hello and welcome back to the Trucking Driver Podcast. I'm Dougie Rankin and I am joined by...
No, I'm Chris Madison, back from the dead.
The one and only. It's been a while, big changes on the front for you. How have you been getting on? Do you want to explain to those who do not know what's been happening in your world over the last couple of months? Because people have been missing you. They've been asking when you've been coming back on. They want to hear from you and get your uniquely Yorkshire insights into the goings-on of the world in the truck industry and otherwise.
Oh, it's been a busy time. Some interesting decisions were made at Christmas time after the annual GIST session. I was just getting increasingly disillusioned with it. Disillusioned with everything, but it all sort of stemmed from this listless feeling of what am I doing with this? You know, paying for that Scania and thinking, really, there's more character in a fridge freezer.
So, how long have you been an owner driver for?
It would be 20 years in March.
It's a good old run at it. Not many people last that long at it.
Yeah, Madison's of Home Firth as an entity is 25 years old, but we're farm contracting and landscaping and what have you beforehand, and then swerved violently into owner driver land. It all just started in a random way. I got a phone call from a mate who said, this team I'm on for went under the subby, and I went, well, that's marvellous, Jake, but for the fact I've got neither a wagon, an operating centre or an O licence, but apart from that I'm good to go. Let's start, mum. Anyway, we did. Well, we got going, and that were on for HR Goodales in Kent on Stanley Doors contract. You know, the sliding mirror doors you can get and sticking alcoves. We were doing that from factory in Sheffield, and hence the HRG number plate that was on the first FL10 when we started, then the Renault, then it went on to Foden, which I left on Foden when she went. But that's the HRG thing. That was HR Goodales. I bought my first truck from them when I was a baby subby. And I did about 8 months, 9 months in that FL10, which was hilarious at 6 foot and just shy of 20 stone. That was a joy. That was a joy to be away all week in that. But anyway, things took a turn for the sinister, and I bought a Renault, which I think everybody ought to buy at least one once just to see what real misery.
Well, an old Renault.
It was a 4X908. GJU. It came from Glasgow. It'd been on contract hire at Royal Mail out of Glasgow.
What is that, like a turbo liner or something it was called?
No, it was a premium.
A premium, or Mark 1 premium?
Aye. And it was, to all intents and purposes, after FL10, it was it was an awesome bit of kit. It was pug ugly, but by God, could it canter on after that Volvo, which was a diabolically slow, underpowered, breathless, nasty thing. It was a 320 with a it might have been a 9-speed box. I can't remember. It's a long time ago, and I've tried to forget. But it didn't have any half gears. I remember that. It was a terrible thing.
It would have been the Renault would have been a 16-speed knockover.
Yeah, the Renault was a knockover job with a massive gear stick. And, it was a bit robust, but it sort of went well, and it did everything it said on the tin, which was be tall, so I could stand up in it and jump about. You know, but I didn't run that at all long, 2004-05 maybe, I don't know, for maybe a year. And then Jeffries of Otley put Gertie in the auctions at Doncaster, and I saw her, and that was it. We were done, we were Fordened, fully Fordened, and the rest. And ploughed on in various guises over years, and had a spell at Maritime when they were new in Leeds. Again, there was me and Ossett Containers, Richard McGee's lads, as subbies. That was your lot, really. They ran from Whitkirk at Whitkirk Recycling Yard in Garforth, Maritime for a time, and we were busy. And then obviously Maritime got more subbies and more of their own trucks and got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And we got less and less and less work. And then a mate of mine, Martin Hancock from Ackworth, he ran a lovely brand new Ford and Alpha. And he bought it, I think it was probably an 05, I can't just remember, when it was high roof Alpha XL with a stack and alloys and all that business. And he had the big Cat 450 in. And I just, I met him on Stanley Doe's job, you know, a few years previous, and I thought, what a piece of kit this is. And then, obviously, I saw that Ford and Gertie, and I bought that, and I had Cummins in it. And oddly, we ended up working together again. We were pulling for Hanson Aggregates out of Pollington near Goole for a bit for Alan Crooks. And we used to meander off down into London and do various nasties around London, builders, merchants and what have you down in Smoke. And then we'd convene on an afternoon in Rootham in Kent, and we used to go to Rootham Sand Quarry, and we'd both get a full load of kiln-dried sand on out of there to go back to Hanson's at Nuneaton, tip that, reload back down London, back in, you know, up, down, up, down. Anyway, I remember I got this Ford, and me and Martin were having a circle jerk around these Fordens one day, and he always let me go first out of quarry because I was young and he wanted me to just get gone. So anyway, so we got going, but you come out of Rootham, you get back onto the motorway at Rootham, and there's a really short slip road comes on halfway up a massive hill, and it's basically 25 yards of slip road, then it's full pull all the way back up. And I set off up there thinking, you know, bro, living the dream. And after about 200 yards, Martin just thought, right, I'll show you what Cat's all about, chap. So he pulls out. I saw him pull out and I thought, yeah, all right, whatever. And he came past me like I was laid in bed. He just floored it up there and he just left me for dead. So I could see really what you were. A few people over the years have said, you know, a Cat engine Ford and in decent tune to make a V8 Scania look a bit limp at times. And he just left me up that hill, gone. Oof, gone. Anyway, we got to Red Lion, I think, that night. And we, you know, Red Lion was still decent and it had a leafy lay-by and you didn't get blocked in and all that. It was, old Red Lion. Anyway, and we were sitting there chowing on pie and chips and a couple of pints. And I says, what's that thing doing to Gallon of a week? And that's when Wheels came off this particular job. And he kind of looked at me and went, 6.5, 7 at a push. I'm like, ooh. So you can see why it went well. It drank well, and it went well. Hell of a thing. By God, it could.
Had he had that fettled? Had he had it like tweaked up a bit?
Brand spanking new from Pelican at Normanton at Wakefield.
It wasn't the easiest thing to tune, but people were doing it, particularly over in sort of Wales, Shropshire, where there was timber haulers with the double drive ones. They seemed to be able to mess about with them, because that came, I remember Caterpillar eventually ended up locking things down quite a bit, because when I went to get the speed limiter raised on my 450 Cat, I had to go, somebody from Caterpillar had to be on the other end of a line to specifically send clearance down to be able to get this done, to take it up from 52. And it was getting difficult because there was only like one person left at Caterpillar who was able to do that at the time. But I think there were guys like cranking these things up, getting them to do like 2 miles to the gallon, loads and loads of black smoke, and then things would go wrong, and they'd be like, for some unknown reason, completely random, my engine's exploded. And I've got no idea. And this kind of Cat, I think, cottoned on to that. But it was always the case that the Caterpillar was the smoky one and it had a bit more grunt, and the Cummins was the clean one that was a lot better on fuel.
It was doing on that job, so we were loaded both ways. We were taking product out of Nuneaton down into London and bringing kiln dried back. So we were loaded up to nails all the time. And she was doing about 8, 8.5 of a week, and probably getting on for 2 MPG better than Martin's. But if he wanted to push on, he could be back in Red Lion and painting his nails by the time I got there. You know, it could really, really go on with that thing. Beast. But it hot. I remember he took it back to Pelican numerous times in a week, and it always ran just out at red, always, from day one. And they said it was just fine. You know, it just ran hot, and that was it. It never expired in a horrible fashion. It just, you know, did what it did. Lovely thing, though. It really got me all giddy about alphas, because the only time I'd really noticed alphas, I were at Driffield Truck Show when I were at Askham Bryan Agricultural College. I went up to Driff, and they had some Mark 1 alphas. It might have just been towards launch. I can't just remember, but we saw these Alpha 1s, and I thought, these are miles better than DAFs, you know, equivalent DAFs. I thought, these are miles better. Apart from that dodgy bloody bed they'd chucked in from Hatcher that used to cut your fingers off because it weighed about 8 stone when you let it down. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think the first time I actually got to place myself in one of these demos like Gertie, we were probably at Peterborough about 2002, perhaps, and it was on stand down as I think they got a blue metallic and a red one. I can't genuinely remember silver one being there, but there were a red metallic and a blue one, I think. And I got to slither into one of these alphas, and I remember smell. Not in a bad way, you know. I just remember smell of that cab when I got in that alpha, and I thought, steering wheel came out to you, and everything was just where it wanted to be. And I thought, oh, these are fantastic looking things. And you look at front of an alpha, and you look at front of a CF, and there was no comparison. They were just poles apart. It's like comparing a pig and a dog. It was just awesome bit of kit. I never ever get my paws on one in a, you know, in a sort of business. But I remember when I got her from auctions, when Jeffrey's sold her, and I bought her, and I went to get her. And I got in her, and she'd be what? She'd be just about two, wasn't she? Sort of two-ish, I think, when I bought her, maybe. It was just like brand new inside, you know. I think it maybe got 60-odd thousand clicks on it, perhaps, or something. I can't remember. It was minimal. And it was, you know, still plastic on the bed type stuff and all that. It smelled brand new. You could smell the leather, and it just smelled wonderful. And I thought, well, at first I thought the price I got it for was just ludicrously low. Nobody was in for that wagon in that sale. They'd come for all these livestock trailers. It was a livestock trailer sale, you know. They'd come for that. And a few people had a bit of a poke at it, but nobody bid. So I got it for a song. I won't spoil his evening if he's listening to this one. You know, it was cheap, really cheap. And then because it was cheap, when I was inexperienced, I thought, oh, my God, what have I done? All those lads in the hall there at the auctions haven't bought it, and I've got it for that. They know what's wrong with it. Oh, Christ. So I had a bit of a wobble about that, but it was unfounded. She was fantastic, as you know. I mean, fast forward 17 years, she's still got the clutch in she had when I bought her. She'd still got all the calipers, original, back end original, engine original. She had one rocker because somebody that did a top set 1 year and failed to tighten that back up, and it just rattled itself off. And that was it, really. I mean, we had a compressor at one point that we turned out we didn't need. Somebody had misdiagnosed it. We were leaking back through compressor. It was losing air on a night, and it was adamant he could hear it bubbling in sump, and it was leaking through a compressor. So I fitted a compressor we didn't need, and it wasn't that, it was something with a leaky pipe somewhere else. Anyway, so she had a compressor she didn't need. She had a fuel pump she didn't need because somebody else misdiagnosed that for the reason it wouldn't start that year when it infamously wouldn't start for a fortnight, and we found a broken wire to fuel pump solenoid. But apart from crappy DAF wiring loom, which really is, well, it's infamous. You know, DAF wiring is infamous in it, let's be right. It's terrible. That was a major bugbear. We replaced miles and miles of that stuff over years. Amy Rogers at JRM was an expert wire finder. You know, he could rummage about in that loom and find a broken wire that nobody else could.
I know at Taylor and Morrison, where I worked and drove an Alpha Tipper for a couple of years, they would make their own wiring looms for them. as soon as they got any of them in, because they were buying them up left, right and centre as they could get a hold of them. And they'd come up with a bespoke wiring harness that they fired in to go to all the major components that would fail regularly. And once they did that, then all those things were like, you know, bulletproof. They'd like learn to overcome it.
She had a time when she, it was one winter, I don't know, maybe about 2012-ish perhaps, and it was every time it rained, something went mental. You know, headlights would stay on, or ABS light would be on, or, you know, your indicator cigarette lighter would fall out. It was really ridiculous. Anyway, Jamie dived into near side wheel well, cab over, and there's a massive multi-plug, front and back loom split multi-plug, a massive thing that locks together with a twist. And for whatever reason, you know, the design bods thought, where could we put this so it could get maximum salt water thrown at it? We'll put it behind fire on chassis there. That'll be perfect. So Jamie split that plug and he said, come here in that. It's all about to get expensive voice that he had. And I went, and you'd never seen a mess in there like that. It was green. It was
green, cool. Yeah.
And I said, oh, Christ, what are we going to do? Because that's what I do. You know, I go into a meltdown mode and I start flapping. And he says, I'll just get a pin kit for it this afternoon and I'll re-pin it, as if I know what that means. You know, I'm like, good. Yeah. Anyway, he did. I went and fetched it, you know, like a plastic bag with about 150 little bits of shiny in it. And sure enough, he set to and he re-pinned both sides, banged it together. And that was it. She was reborn for another couple of years without any messing. And then she went for chassis painting at Scania at Sheffield, who was supposed to be the watchword.
Oh, the infamous chassis painting saga. How many times was the chassis painted in the truck?
I had it painted once, dark blue, in maybe 2009-ish. That was at a spot in Heckmondwike. I can't remember what they were called. It was all right, but it was blue. It's bloody miserable. It was dark. It was a funny colour. It was almost that blue. It was purple. I don't know. It was all right. It was just, anyway, I can't remember who I saw. We were at a truck show somewhere, and I saw a Volvo, a silver Volvo with a red chassis, and it looked ace. I thought, I want a red chassis. So, rang round a few and, Richard Fern recommended Scania because they'd done his 2004 580 bought brand new. He had all his painted down there when it came from factory. And to be right, by 2012, it still looked like it had been painted last week. Brilliant. So I went to Sheffield and they just, well, you'll all remember that because it was everywhere. They just mullered it. They sent it externally to some spot in deepest, darkest Doncaster. They drove it in winter up to this spot, shot blasted it to bits, and then drove it back bare metal from Donny to Sheffield, and then threw some paint at it. And then I went to pick it up on Friday night, and there was wet paint. Oh, there was paint that had been missed. There was whatever they were wiring, they'd not moved it. It was just over the top and behind it was still blue, and oh, Christ, it was a mess. I mean, yada, yada, yada. But the big problem there was when we got it back, it was ABS red alert meltdown, and we only had brakes really on handbrake, or everything was knackered. And then I think by that point, I think Ash had unluckily been given the task of looking after it after Jamie had just had enough of it, to be right. And Ash spent probably a full day, all day, sorting out wiring that had been blown to pieces with sandblaster, and wiring that had been reconnected to spotlights and light bars that had just been twisted together and taped up. They'd done something insane behind Susie board between stacks, and there was a dead short in there somewhere, and that took some finding. But anyway, found everything, got it back to normal, and we got back to work. But unless hell froze over, there was no way that they were ever going to paint anything of mine again, you know, not even a cupboard door. So there we go. I have to say, though, I don't blame the entire company. I don't hold Scania Sheffield responsible. I blame a couple of chaps. But anyway, since then, when I bought this awful Euro box that I had for the last 3 years, the service I've had from Sheffield parts wise has been fantastic. There's a guy there, Andrew Simpson, on parts. He is one of the most level-headed and knowledgeable Scania men you could ever hope to meet. Nothing, no matter how hysterical I want to rang him up at stupid o'clock, ever knocked him off his, off his feet, dealt with me, got me what I needed, got it there by next morning, or got it there sometimes on a Saturday afternoon. Andrew's turned up in the yard about 4 o'clock, just rolled in. Thought I'd just call and see if you were still here, because I think Tony, your voice suggested you might quite need these, you know. Top man, absolutely top block. Anybody that deals with Scania Sheffield for parts will be saying, yep, I'll go with that. Andrew is a great bloke, and I'm sure I'll probably miss him going forward more than he'll miss me.
But yeah, well, it's like, I mean, 17 years. I mean, these are like sort of glitches. It's not the truck's fault as such for stuff like that sort of falling apart. And they have enormously durable trucks. The fact is that there's still some of them working today.
She only ever stopped twice and left me in the doo-doos in 17 years. She stopped once when turbo expired in Scunny coming out at Steelworks about 2011, perhaps, and she'd got just shy of 1,000,000 K. And I just pulled out at Rob Miller, going up Mortlash Hill in Scunny back up towards 180, and she just went sort of bang, squeak, and put a load of white out, and I thought, turbo, bollocks, turned it straight off, which saved everything going up into intercooler. So I got recovered eventually by possibly the worst recovery firm in the world, but that just needed a new turbo, a quick swill out in that pipe, and a new oil feed pipe to make sure, and that were back on the road. And I think turbo cost somewhere at region of 500 quid. Recovery was ludicrous in those days. To get a unit from Scunny back to our yard, I think they touched me for about 800 quid, which was dire. But anyway, when they've got you by the balls, they've got you, haven't they? So that was that. She had a new turbo at 900 thou, which was pretty bloody good going, I'd have thought. And then she stopped once when I went on a mission down to West Wales to deliver some stuff, some farm plant, etc., from Euro Auction.
Funnily enough, I've got a picture from that that excursion right in front of me, sitting at the coast.
Aye.
Yes, I remember that. That went in the magazine. Well, because I've dug out quite a lot of Foden pictures recently. It's funny you should mention that right there.
Yeah,
it was otherwise a good trip, that, wasn't it? It was interesting the way it got sorted out, as I recall.
Got down, I can't just remember the name of the town, Aberarran or something, perhaps, just above Newquay, between Newquay and Aberystwyth. Nice lad, I knew him from David Brown Tractor Club days. He used to come up and play tractors at Meltham. Nice lad. Bought a load of gear at Euro Auctions, silage trailer, bits and bobs, cement mixers, mini diggers, this and that. So I finished on Cobble Friday afternoon, picked a little loader up, shot over to Euro Auctions, loaded, got down to Newtown. Did I stop in Newtown on Friday night? Welsh Pool or Newtown? Anyway, doesn't matter. And then got down, tipped, breakfast with the Morgan, set off back, empty, banging up towards Aberystwyth. She just stopped. No messing, just stopped. Black dashboard. She would turn over, but there were no dashboard lights. Couldn't figure it out. Rang Jamie in hysterics, as usual, and Jamie had got a CF DAF in yard, which isn't the same, but at least he could go get in passenger side and have a look in fuse box, which he did. And we went through basically comparing fuse and fodding, it seems. Had about 4 or 5 on one row, extra on one end. And they weren't labelled up as anything that I could decipher, but Jamie says, well, if I haven't got those in this, if you've got those, start checking those. So I pulled a few out, found one, blown, replaced it, dashboard came back to life, you know, giving it the daft diddly-ding routine, and she fired up. He says, right, get it back together and get home. So I did. I'd rung Jim Lyons, you know, the famous Jim Lyons used to come and do top set every Christmas for me, and he'd been busy and he'd not answered. Anyway, I was tearing up past Craig Isaacs. I think he was parked at Livestock Market at Welsh Pool or something. Craig Isaacs wagon. Anyway, I was coming up bypass there, and Jim rang me. He says, "No, lad, what's the matter?" And I told him, and he went, And he just said, "Do you use Dash Dandy and any of that bloody silicon stuff?" And I went, "Yeah, why?" He goes, "Right." And he had it before. He'd had it on a tractor as well, where these lads are throwing silicon at dashboard all the time, and silicon everywhere. And he he believed that silicon gets in, it gets in everywhere. And he said, what I think's happened with that is you've got silicon that's worked its way into fuse board, and you've hit a pothole, and just for a split second, it's touched and let go. You know, silicon is an insulator, and you've blown that fuse. He says, what I would do if I were you on Monday when you've time is get a paintbrush and get some brake cleaner and clean all those bloody fuses and holes out. He says, and stop using that bloody stuff. He says, in future, just use Mr. Sheen. I'm like, yes, boss. So I did, and it never did it again. But that's it, really. In all those years, apart from, you know, some at calipers needed slider kits, and Jamie did one, I think he did one hub, maybe two hubs, and exciter rings, I think, on middle axle. She never asked for anything. Oh, gear stick disappeared through floor one afternoon, which was hilarious, because that rubber cradle that they mounted on decided to retire. So I had some fairly thick bungee cords, and I strung them back up with bungee cords, and that gear stick rode on bungee cords for about 3 weeks, no probs, until we got time to get that big stupid bloody rubber thing changed. She had a radiator morning that we went to Assen in 2019. First radiator she'd ever had. Daffer got them on special, and mine had been a bit scabby looking, so I bought one, and Jamie banged it on before Assen. A couple of air conditioning compressors, but that's wear and tear. One steering mitre box, I think. Same again, wear and tear, but with 1.7 million on. I don't think that's a big problem, but what a fantastic bit of kit that was. And that really set a benchmark, didn't it?
Yeah.
That I touched after that, that you sent me to demo to play in for a magazine. I was like, straight away, as soon as it came, I was like, don't like it. And you're like banging your head on desk, probably, and Mandy at that banging at desk.
And I mean, now there's something unique about trucks like that. Well, like the Ford. And I've always been fascinated by drivelines where you can get the same truck but with different engines in them.
Yeah.
It's always like interested me, but there is something different about them. Remember when I let Stephen Foley borrow my Ford for a while because he needed it, and he'd never driven one before, and he was like, oh, it's just going to be a DAF CF. And then after a few days, he was on the phone going, sell me it. He says, this is fantastic. Mm. It's just the combination of the cat, the Eminox, the Jake brake.
Aye.
So I've got the 16-speed manual, but yeah, they're great trucks. Foden did a really good job with what they had to work with, and it does make you think what they would have been able to achieve if they had access to the XF and perhaps a larger power plant as well. And it's testament to the fact that there's still a lot of them still working today, and many of them that have stopped working had lifespans way above and beyond what a truck would normally have. So yeah, you can see why people hold them in such high regard.
Unfortunately, Cummins in America didn't hold her in much regard, because I wrote to Cummins when she did a million miles. Obviously, they have a million mile club in America for Cummins engine. So we sent off all the paperwork for that, and they never even replied, which would be a shame, because you'd think they'd have been quite keen.
Yeah.
Something in Blighty was still tramming on at a million miles, but they didn't bother, so I thought, right, well, never mind. Ironically, though, they invited us twice to Cummins Holset factory at Huddersfield. Once for, I think it was 75th anniversary at plant, and then they invited us for another one as well. I can't just think. And I was there with Andy Thorpe with his Olympic 1 year. I just can't imagine why Cummins were interested in States, but perhaps a little 11 litre 5,000 miles away doesn't really push the buttons, you know, when they're dealing with big motors.
You never know. It just might never have got to the right person. That could have had to go through a few different departments, and it just never made it where it needed to go. And if it had got to the right person, you could have been on a flight over there for a guided tour. You just never know about big companies like that, unfortunately.
I'm just thinking, if I'd have carried on the last 3 years going like we were going for Stuart on air,
mm-hmm.
I was doing between 17 and 2,000 miles a week. So if we'd have carried on for another 3 years, should have been probably just over 2 million miles now, I would have thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't see any reason why she'd not stand it, because I changed gearbox and back end oil twice a year, and there was never any swarf ever on plug. You know, so there was no, you know, there were no panic. It were Andy Burnham's fault that wagon got sold. Burnham, as you know, Manchester.
The mayor of Manchester, yes.
He was going to inflict the biggest low emission zone you could imagine. It was going to be Greater Manchester, which goes up as far as Wigan, Chorley, and then across to Rochdale, Oldham, you know, all the outlying bits, everything that wasn't on the M60 or M62 or M61, you know, off motorway, it was going to be in zone. Now, I could cope, you know, with London, because I'd rather bite my leg off than go to London anyway. But I could cope with Bath, because you've got to be a masochist to want to go to Bath anyway. But Birmingham, yeah, I could have paid that a couple of times a month to go in there if I needed to go in there. But Manchester, I couldn't sustain that. If we so much as, you know, nipped into Middleton, into the supermarket there or anything like that, I'd have been screwed. And it was somewhere we go quite a lot, you know, with Omnia products and the rest of it. We're in and out of Manchester and surrounding bits all the time. So I thought, I'm going to have to do something here.
This is the thing with the ULEZ zones, because it transpired that they didn't come in the manner that we expected, but there was so much concern and panic for so many hauliers that they were forced to get rid of so many lorries way before their time. And as it turns out, they ultimately wouldn't have needed to, and it's scandalous, really. It's so frustrating, and it's not not sustainable or good for the environment either to go and be putting up threatening regulations like that, then they don't come in. Yeah, really frustrating. But like you said at the time, it looked like it was going to be impossible, and you couldn't wait until it happened, because if it did happen, then trucks would have been impossible to get a hold of, and you wouldn't have been able to use the one that you had.
You couldn't get new, because we were just wrong end of COVID.
And COVID is
Chinese semiconductor plants weren't, and there were 2-year waiting lists plus for new tackle, and second-hand prices you could watch in commercial motor every week. They were going up $4,000 and $5,000 a week. Now, I thought, this is going to get ridiculous. I mean, I tried to buy a 500 tag, from Mick Moody, and I rang him on Friday, I think, to see if I could go over at weekend. And I rang him Saturday to see if I could go look at it Saturday. This is gone. And I went, oh, God's sake. So I said, look, Mick, I'm never going to get anything, am I? Because as soon as you bought it, it's gone. I mean, just once, got to have a look. And he says, oh, yeah, if you're serious. Yeah, he says, right. Next one that we've got coming in, I will tell you, and you can come before I put it on internet. So he did. He was good to his word. And he bought that one of mine from Moores down in Somerset, because it had a retarder on it, I think, ultimately. And it was smart. It was low mileage. It was just shy of 300K, 285K, something similar. And he bought it because of retarder. And it was a smart thing. So he rang me. I went over. We shook hands. Job done. I paid 80. And within about a month, same sort of tackle were fetching just 90. So it was getting to that. It was getting to that point where it was going to become really new money for old kit. So I sort of pounced at right time, as far as we were concerned. And the money has never been an issue. It was never, oh, I can't afford to keep this truck, because it was, you know, my finance wasn't much. It was nine and a bit a month or something. But she saved me maybe 1.5 average to gallon over a year, which probably equated to about 15 grand. And it did what it said it would do, which is go forward and backwards with the minimum amount of fuss. It was nice, you know, it was all right.
To look at anything at the sort of Euro 6 level, there's nothing that's kind of special and kind of really stands out. If you were wanting to go for a manual, you would have probably have had to go for a DAF of some sort. Probably like a Euro, like an XF, I guess. Potentially, like I don't think the CF would have been like sort of an option, because it would have been too similar to the Foden, but not the Foden.
They were going to be a Scania, I think. I never liked the look of them front on. I think the next gen's front on are bloody ugly, but side on, I could sit in pickup on a night, you know, just talking to John at work before we locked up and went home at Barnsley. And I could sit side on and think, you've got a fine profile. Lovely thing from side to look at. Really, really imposing bit of kit. And it was nice. You know, it was just nice. But that's all it ever was nice. And I didn't get to gate on the morning and fiddle with that evil Arkwright till spec finger-biting bastard of a padlock and look at it and think, oh, and be a bit giddy. Mm-hmm. And I was giddy every morning for that wagon, for that fob. And when I got to that yard gate every day, without fail, I looked at that under that security light and I thought, fit. It's like being married to Britt Eklund or Kylie or something, rather than being married to Bette Lynch of Coronation Street or somebody. It was just, yeah, and it made me happy. Granted, haulage industry tried its best to make me unhappy, and it succeeded frequently, but the one thing that kept me going back to trough like a greedy but stupid piglet was that wagon. It was a pleasure. Once I was in there and strapped in, we're good to go. It was a fantastic place to be, and I loved it. And I really had no intention of selling it. There was no need, you know, bounce.
You really didn't want to,
no,
to sell it, to get rid of it. That's one of the primary things about being an owner driver is, if you're passionate about trucks and driving,
yeah,
it's having that opportunity to drive something that you would not be able to,
yeah,
working for somebody else. You can have something completely unique. And as it, and the Foden was that. And of course, as time went on, as they got rarer, it became all the more special. It grew into being something.
Well, it's kind of ironic, isn't it, that for the first 10 years, I didn't even have, you know, decals on it. And I'm not really sure why I suddenly started. The catalyst for all that work and customising and faffing about was, I won't name him because, well, it's a chap that I knew over in Sandbach. Unfortunately, he got killed. He went to Isle of Man TT on his bike with his mates, and he came a cropper, and he didn't come back. And he had some stacks in his garage that were destined to go on an ERF that he was about to set about. And anyway, his mate was sort of consigned with getting rid of all this stuff, and he just rang me up and said, "Do you want these stacks for that Foden?" And I thought, well, yes. So I went over on a Saturday morning and I brought them back, and then I rang Jamie and said, having a good day? And, yeah, not so bad. Why? And I said, well, I'm just going to spoil it. And I told him what I wanted him to do, and he was like, oh, great. So I did what all heroes do. I went on holiday. I just went on holiday and left him to it for a fortnight. And when I came back, he'd grafted these stacks onto a frame that he'd made, and he'd fitted them, and it was a fantastic job, brilliant job. On they went. He made a Susie bar and all the rest of it, and the rest is history. But then, you know, once the stacks went on, I thought, oh, she could probably do with some decals on here, maybe now after. So Dave Askew at CS Graphics in Huddersfield, he's a clever lad. He set to with his computer, his CAD machine, and he mocked up 5,000 or 6,000 different sets of decals until I went, those. And then he set to, and, you know, we did it, and on they went. And then Steve Twigg used to be at Lowfields Transport. He's a bit of a genius when it comes to all things interior and custom. And I just had a word with Steve about what I could do inside. And he sourced a complete set of interior, dashboard, door cards, cupboard doors, all that business. And then he set to and painted them. You know, it was all white inside. He set to and did that. And then him and his lad came over one weekend. I started taking out all the original stuff, and he finished that, got it all out, refitted all the painted stuff. We got the white wheel in, no problem. And we just made it how it wanted to be. Lucy, bless her, Junior, she spent a few days telling me to go away at home because I got this Alcantara sort of suede fabric stuff from Holland, and it was the stickiest substance on earth. So I was going to end up trapped in it and suffocate like a cat or something. So she just said, "Dad, go away." So I did. And she just covered all the cupboard doors and everything else with it and, you know, got on with it. I did a hell of a job. And it was a great place to be. It really was a fantastic place to be. I loved it. And then when I bought the Scania, Richard Fern, bless him. Hey, Rich. He said, just sell it. I'm like, yeah, but, and he's like, yeah, but she'll just sit there in the corner of the yard and you'll be busy and you won't do what you say you're going to do, which is wash it on a weekend and take it for a run out. You won't, because she just, you won't. Trust me. He just sold his 580 that he bought brand new. And he said, look, I've sold that. I said I'd never sell it. I've sold it. It's gone. Once it's gone, it's gone. Your mind will be, you'll be all right. So chap that bought it, Lee Johnson, he had been on, wanted to buy it for ages. And in the end, I rang him again. So we'd been here before. I was going to sell him it. And then I'd stopped. And he was, you know, he was a good lad, Lee. He just expected me to change my mind at last minute. But this time I thought, no, it's going to a good bloke. He'll, you know, it's fine. And he did say, if you want to borrow it to go to Arsenal or any of that nonsense, just ring me and you can come and borrow it. You can take it to shows. You can do what you want. All right. Come and fetch it then. So he did. He came, he took it, all the parts, doors, bonnets, everything, just took the lot and went. And I've got a video on my phone still of the day it went. And I'd not show you that video because a big fat bloke crying like a baby is ridiculous. But anyway, that's where we were at with it. And as soon as it went out that gate that day, as soon as it went, if I could have stopped it before he got to the bottom of the street, I would have done. And it'd have been back in the yard. And there hasn't been a day since it went that I've thought that was the right thing to do. I don't blame Fernie because he's less of a tart than I am. He's quite a pragmatic. So, you know, she's done good. You know, she's done good service, but she needs to be gone. Boom, one of them chaps. And I'm just an emotional.
It was quite complicated at the time, though, with having the Scania and all those kind of things. It wasn't easy. It wasn't just a straightforward situation of I'm just going to get rid of it. There were reasons at the time, and obviously, you know, looking back now, yeah, you really wish that you would have kept it. But, you know, I wouldn't hang yourself up on it so much because it wasn't as easy as just yes or no, I'm going to get rid of it as such, you know?
No, if there had been a shed, a decent indoor space for it somewhere, it wouldn't have gone. But I went to look at a few places. There was somewhere up Nate Flouch at Penistone who claimed to be super shed and all this business and it was dry and the rest of it, but it wasn't really. It was like a monkey horse place with a through wind, and I thought, but I didn't want to see her sitting in the yard. And you can make anything fit if you you can make any course of action fit if you want it to. So I did. I made it fit in my mind and I told everybody it's the right thing to do. Yeah. And it wasn't. It was plainly not, because 4 years on or whatever now, I still mope about. And I wish people, and if you're listening, people, you know who you are, whenever you see it out being riven round and having its knackers revved off and wheel spinning round roundabouts and doing stupid things, don't send me videos.
So where is it? What's happened to it? What's his life been, the Foden, since he parted company with it? When was it you sold it?
It'll be coming up 3 years, I think. It was 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it went off to join a collection. But I think occasionally people that work for this chap get hold of it and just rip it up and down a bit, and then people video it and send it to me, and I think marvellous. Ultimately, it's going to get painted. I hear now somebody on TikTok that's been playing with it, as they're going to paint it in their colours in summer, which will be better for me because it won't be mine anymore. It'll be a fairly snazzy looking Foden, but it won't be mine. You know, it's still got the light boards in the corner at windscreen that I put in. It's still got Madison's of Home Firth boards grouped to interior wall at back. It has taken my name off of it, but it's still mine. You know, I built it.
Mm.
That's what pisses you off. It's like, if you were, I don't know how to put this really in simple terms, if you've got a fairly plain looking wife and you spend 100 grand on some fairly impressive plastic surgery, it's like Les Dennis and Amanda Holden, I imagine, every time she's on the, she's on telly, Les will be, God, that sort of deal.
Yeah, but then again, Les can go, hey, you know what? Was he married to her?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a small consolation. It's not a great one, but it is a consolation nonetheless.
I'd have her back tomorrow. If he rang me and he said, look, I've had an epiphany. I was visited last night by three spirits, and if I don't let you have her back, everything's going to go south. I'd fetch you back this weekend. I really would. I'd have her back this weekend. No.
You never know. You never know. It may yet happen. It may yet happen.
I think I do. I think he's happy with it, and that's that. You know, I don't bear Lee Johnson any malice at all. He's a grand bloke. He really is a lovely bloke, and I wish him all the best with it. But it's my fault. I should have just continued to be indecisive, because I've made a career out of being indecisive. So you think for once I could have managed to be indecisive then. Anyway, kids weren't impressed. Lucy especially wasn't impressed that I did it. I think she maybe understands now, but at the time she really didn't, and the younger ones didn't. They were genuinely upset. It was, you know, Gertie, this, everybody had grown up with Gertie. Everything was about Gertie. We'd get back off holiday on a Saturday afternoon, I'd have to swing by Yard, which is 20 miles away from home, just have a look. You know, I couldn't leave it all Sunday and nip down. I had to go straight back from Abersock over at Woodhead to Yard, have a go up, and then go home. You know, it was that kind of sad job. And over at Christmas holidays, I'd have to, you know, I'd meander down just to, you know, do something. I'd make a tail up. I needed to go in container for something, and I'd go down and just touch it and sit in it for a bit. And it was that kind of a deal. I never, you know, like, we finished Gist on Christmas Eve at 6 o'clock at morning, and I'd dump Scania outside a building in the yard, and that'd be that. And I'd jet off home, and we'd go up North Yorkshire, and I'd come back on 4th of January, and, you know, and I'd turn up Lane at work, and it'd still be there, unfortunately. And I'd think, oh, well, better look next time. If that had been stolen, I'd have been chuffed. But, you know, it's one of those, isn't it? It does what it says it'll do, and you just don't get character and machinery in this day and age. You know, it's not designed for character. It's not designed for people in overalls to mend with sockets, is it? It's designed for somebody in Sweden to suck all your data out of your ECU remotely, fiddle with it, and fire it back over, and some boffin over here with a laptop to catch it and shove it back in. It's not what it was. It's about different things, isn't it?
It's not trucks. Trucks are enormously emotional and evocative things.
Yeah,
it's quite a unique industry in that respect. Like, unlike sort of pretty much any other sort of trades, people get genuinely attached and passionate about these machines, because it's almost like they're living and breathing at times when you're with them, like, all the time, and you get to know all the different noises and characteristics of them. And as modern trucks have come on, they've become, they have become kind of cold and sort of ruthlessly efficient. Not that the Foden and trucks, other trucks of that era, like it, weren't the same. You could get people who are extremely passionate about 4-series Scanias or version 1 Volvos from that era, but they're kind of fall under the same grouping, really. But modern things are not the same, and yet that was when you lost the Foden, really, that was, it just showed you how it was fundamental, it was central to what you did as an owner driver. It really was.
It was like Austin Powers losing his mojo.
Losing his mojo, yeah. So
I just didn't have the same urge to do any of it after that.
You're listening to the Truck and Driver podcast, brought to you by TomTom. The TomTom Go navigation offers a specific set of truck features. You can set your cargo and truck dimensions for specific routes, so you can drive confidently on suitable roads, making every journey efficient and reliable. Truck yeah. I think a lot of people here listening to this would fully understand without you needing to explain it. We know and we understand if you're ever like into trucks in a way above and beyond just being a driver of them. And there are guys who are drivers where it's just a job for them and a truck's just a piece of equipment. But for all of us, it's so, so much more than that. Of course, with being an owner driver, you've got so much more responsibility and everything that comes along with it. But you can allow for that because you're driving something that you love, which means that the job is something that you're passionate about. So, with the Scania, the Scania is no more.
No. I got to Energist this year, which for some reason, I've said before, for some reason, I love Gist. I love doing it at Christmas. That week for John Waddups is marvellous. I mean, I like working for Alti. Alti's great. It really is. So there's no problem regarding packing up, you know, to do with Stuart or rates or any of that. It was fine. You know, Alti's been brilliant. It was my head, and my head had just had enough. And I got to end the Gist, and it was great, blah-de-blah. But I just thought, Christ, I've got to come back in a fortnight and start another year of this. And I just want enjoying it. I can't, you know, there's no specific thing. Not really. I just wasn't enjoying any of it. It was just, if you think you've got to do something every day, you've got to, you know, you'll start to think you don't want to do it. And then even trivial things that you do become a chore. And it, you know, Kate's had a terrible time getting me up and out. I just refuse some mornings, you know, just like a horse won't go in a box. No, she's like, you've got to get up. It's 4 o'clock. Get up. No, I'm not going. You've got to go. And she's having to deal with me like a baby. You know, you've got to go. I'm not going. You can't make me. And I won't go. And it got to a point where dark mornings, when everybody else is in bed and you have to get up, and it'd be 2 or 3 hours before any lunatics ring you, you think, I don't want to be sitting on my own thinking shit like this for 3 hours. And then everything then starts to come at you. And I was starting to get paranoid. Every squeak, every bump, every noise, I was like, oh Christ, diff's coming, you know, diff's going to drop out, gearbox is going to drop out. Sounds mental, but it, you know, when it's happening to you, you realise that perhaps everybody that you've thought in the past is a bit of a lightweight isn't, because everybody's got their little trigger, and mine was just paranoia. And it started to extend into all sorts of things. Because I didn't have Joe until I was 45, so I'm thinking, God, when he leaves school, I'm going to be 60. Oh, he's going to have an old dad. Oh, you know, I'll think about that for 3 hours and get a fluster on. And then I just thought, I've got to do something about this, because this is serious bollocks, is this. You know, this is getting to the point where I'm going to be bloody frightened to open the fridge door in case margarine falls on me or something. So I thought, I've got to get a handle on this. And to be right, people have been saying to me, people that matter have been saying to me for ages, look, chap, if you're not right, get rid. And I'm thinking, you can't just get out of this. You can get into business a lot easier than you can get out. But Alti, bless him, he just said, sell it. Then what? He says, just sell it before you end up in madhouse. Get it rid of it. Come and drive one of mine. Just come and sit in one of mine. He says, 3 months, 3 years, whatever. Just come, let me do all worrying. He says, I've enough to worry about. So, you know, worrying about your little extra bit, just come and drive one of mine. And I'm thinking, I haven't had a gaffer for years. What am I going to do? And I thought, well, if I'm going to have a gaffer, it wants to be him, really, because I could strangle most of the people, I should think, that, you know, clip-on ties, clipboards and all that business. So, yeah, well.
You've been subbing for him anyway.
Yeah.
Large amount of the time. So it makes sense.
He's not the sort that's master and servant type nonsense. He's, you know, no chap, what are we on with? Blah, 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 you know, and we'll just take piss out of each other for an hour, have a brew and then get gone. Marvellous. Top bloke. Can't do enough for you. And you know, this time when I was sort of slipping down into the icy depths of whatever I was on with, he just said, do it. And Kate said, well, do it then. And I was just, you know, count to 10 and jump in a pond. It was like that. Like, told me nose, 9, 10, and just jumped. And I got up Sunday morning. I remember this, it was end of January, maybe first week in Feb. Got up, I emailed Pete White, who seems to be the world's authority on selling Scanias at the minute. Hey, LP. And I sent him the blurb and all the pictures, and he says, your pictures are shit. He says, go and take some proper ones. So I did. And he went, there, but yeah, much better. And then he banged it on his selling page Sunday morning. And he took a deposit that afternoon, and then it got real. You know, the shit got real, dude. And I thought, hellfire, it's happening. And it happened. And he got what... Well, he got exactly what he valued it at. And I mean, the prices some of them are fetching at minute in a kit that I think looked better than mine in a lot of ways, were fetching less money. But chap that bought mine wanted that one. He'd seen it. It fitted him with what he wanted. It were in his colours virtually. Had a retarder. It had all the bits and pieces that he wanted. And he bought it and off it went. Eventually it went. And then day after it went, well, same day, in fact, it went. I went over to the yard, met Stu, threw some keys at me, brought this thing home, and that's it. Here we are. I'm employed. Wow. And anybody that you talk to that knows would say that it's the best thing that I've done in the last 10 years.
Yeah. Well, you've got, respect is due. There's very few people who have 20 years unbroken service as an owner driver. 17 years of that was behind the wheel of what became one of the most well-known, instantly recognisable and unique trucks in the country. And you went out at the right time on your own terms as well. It takes takes a lot of guts and sort of determination to go, you know what, I need to do what's right for me here and make the right decision. And yeah, it sounds like it absolutely is, because you can see where the industry right now, anyway, look at the big hauliers that have dropped like flies this year. Yeah. There's a lot of them, and the costs are just off the chart, and we don't know what's kind of going on going forward. So it's brilliant that you've got the opportunity of just going to work for Holtley as well. So I guess the question a lot of people who are listening might be asking now is, what are you driving?
Is slithered me into a 540 FH Globetrotter XL. It's been a part of that extremely sexy demo, pre-production 750 that you launched at me 3 years ago.
540 FH is one of the best all-round trucks in the modern era that you can get. It's they're good driving trucks, and obviously you've got the eye shaft, you've got a grunty engine, and they handle well, steer well, sit in the road well. All the things that you're probably finding as well. How are you getting on with it? And how do you rate it compared to the S-Cab Scania?
They're better looking. I mean, straight away, start with the trivia. They are better looking. I mean, I've always thought Volvos are gorgeous to look at. However, it's a revelation comfort-wise. I mean, these seats in this thing are just amazing. If you think on, this is probably what? Because they're all on private plates, these. I don't know where we are. It might be year-related, this one. It might be a 67. I don't know. Might be newer. Might be an 18. Whatever. But it's coming up to 850,000K, and it's as tight as a new one. Nothing squeaks. Nothing rattles. It handles like it's on rails, pretty much. Scania always used to feel to me like it were... I've never known the difference between oversteer and understeer. You know, all those years watching Top Gear, I've no idea what they mean. But round the corner, it feels like it's going under itself, like it's trying to sort of roll under itself, Scania. This just goes round and off.
Yes.
Left, right, boom, and off it goes. The gearbox is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. And this isn't a dual clutch, this one. This is single clutch. Yeah, but it's marvellous. And like I said, those seats are just amazing comfort wise. Steering wheel, everything goes exactly where it needs to go, right up to your chin or wherever you want it. It's the bollocks. I'd like to get let loose on a version 5 at some point with a dual clutch and just have a play in that.
But might be able to see what we can do for you there. I know Volvo are in the process of updating their fleet for 2024 at the moment, because they've got some big updates that are coming in the way. They've obviously got the aero option, they've got the mirror cam option, but there's also quite another few revisions under the skin and updates to the dash. I don't know if they'll have a 540 dual clutch or a dual clutch on the fleet. They're pushing, they're big into turbo compounds. So, but we'll see. We'll see if one's knocking about, because the dual clutch is just phenomenal. It just changes gear seamlessly. You can't even feel it change gear.
Obviously, now anything Swedish and sexy that you get that you want to throw at me, I have to throw at Holtz now, and I'll just have to
drive it. Absolutely. So how long have you been out in the Volvo, and how have things changed in that time from the start of the year to now? How do you feel in terms of from 1 to 10, how much better do you feel?
Oh, 12. A good solid 12. I'm enjoying it. I'm actually enjoying going to work. Now, I will wake up at 4 o'clock and I'll get up. So alarm goes off at 4, I'm up. I'm in shower and downstairs. I'll talk to Kat. I'll have a cup of tea. I'll get me tackle. I'll be in pickup. I do 15 miles of at tops to yard. I'm out the yard at 25, gone. I haven't had that for 2 or 3 years. I've been, well, reticent is an understatement, but, I just didn't want to leave house. You know, winter was terrible. I just didn't want to go anywhere. But this, now, I've just sort of slowed down. Everything's just, and relax. It's great. I'm actually enjoying work, and I haven't enjoyed work. Apart from odd day, you know, we have a magnificent sort of a day in summer when we're dragging cucumbers around at Essex or something, and it's all tickety-boom. We get back to Colesworth, and there's somebody in, you know, and it's like, today's been a good day, great deal. But I can remember good days, which tells you that life must have been getting seriously down the pen. You know, if you can remember good days out of a year, you're doing the right thing. But this is a revelation. You know, just, it must sound like, you know, I'm an alien, I've just arrived, because I'm sort of tickled by the concept of going to work and then some chap puts money in your bank on a Thursday. And you don't have to prat about on a weekend invoicing and buggering about and doing VAT returns and mithering about half shafts and rest of it. You just don't. You just go to work, do what you do as well as you can do it, and just go home. And I never thought I'd go back to this, but honestly, the amount of owner drivers that I know, and I can name you owner drivers, you know I can, Sean Charnley, John Wilmer, Billy Ford, all of you that have said to me, and said to me quite consistently, get rid of it, you daft bugger, and words to that effect. And I'm like, no, yeah, you're just an old duffer. Bugger off. I've got some years in me yet. Blah, blah, blah. Well, now I've got rid of it. It's like, you know, we're all sort of Jedis, and all these old boys come and stand in a circle around me and hum quietly as if to say, we are at one, my son. And, you know, you were right. You were right. You knew that this was the thing to do 10 years ago when I was still firing on all cylinders. And there's got to be better ways to ruin your life than, you know, paying 15 grand a year finance and spending 80 grand a year on diesel and charging about like a man possessed to realize you've made 30 grand.
Yeah, but I think it's a different world post-COVID in so many different ways. The haulage industry, certainly, with the way that costs and things have just gone off the scale, and nothing is getting improving in terms of what's happening on the road networks or traffic or facilities or anything like that. I think it was definitely, we were in a different world and a different place back in 2019.
All those factors were the same factors 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago, as they are now, but none of that, roads, traffic, congestion, heads and goods in, none of it is, it's not winding me up anymore. I'm just not bothered, you know. If there's a problem, I'll just ring somebody in office and say, this has happened, chap here thinks that these should be pink and the blue and yada, 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 and I'll just sit there and go, and then, you know, Adam or Jason or Stuart or whoever will ring me back and go, right, chap, this is what's happening. And I'll just go do that instead. And I'm not fighting it. I'm not fighting anything anymore. I always seem to be fighting against something. And it didn't necessarily have to be a real thing I was fighting against. I was always pushing, you know, pushing back against something. Just, halt. And I'm just letting it sort of... Shit's happening, you know, it's going down. Whatever's going down today is going to go down, whether I go insane or whether I just sit there and go, all right, chap, you come to me when you decide what you're doing and we'll do it. All right, and I just go back and I have a cup of tea and I listen to Ken Bruce or, you know, try and put my legs behind my head in a yoga style and do whatever. I'm just not rising to anything, and it's probably going to prolong my life by 10 or 15 years, because I probably won't have that gigantic stroke I was going to have in 5 years' time now.
Yeah, well, shows you when your head's in the right place and you're enjoying what you're doing, you can contend with all the other bollocks that we've got to put up with in the world of transport. So I think anybody that's listening to this could take this as sort of good advice. If you're listening and you're genuinely not happy in the situation that you're in and you've been feeling the things that Chris has been feeling, you know, talk to people and listen to people as well and think about making the change for the better.
Yeah.
Because you have got the capability to do it. Now it's great. I think anybody listening would reckon you're substantially more lively than you have been. We've been in ups and downs. There's been times in this podcast that I've been pretty dour and as well. I've been through quite a lot during the pandemic and things. So yeah, it's fantastic to hear you're back and in good form.
Probably going to turn up to a few gigs we've booked this year instead of just booking gigs and sticking tickets to the fridge door and not going, you know. We're actually going to turn up to some of them.
What are you going to do? Are you going to go to any shows or things like that? Are you going to go to any truck shows or events?
Well. Funnily enough, do you remember that old 4000 X Freightliner FOD I had with Rolls-Royce Eagle?
For a very short period of time. Yes, you had that FOD 4000. What reg was that?
H. 91.
What of it?
Chap that I sold it to in Northern Ireland has been in touch with me, and he said, since I bought, like, he wanted that for his wedding to transport his missus to the church, a lucky girl. So he did that with it. And then he said pretty much after that, COVID kicked in, so that was destined to stay in garage for a bit. And then they produced child number one, and that kept it in garage a bit longer, and he was just thinking about releasing it and playing, and then child number two's about to appear. So he said, do you want it back? And I said, well, actually, probably might do, to be fair. So she may be coming back. I haven't spoken to him in a few weeks, but I think she might be coming back. He runs Backers and Forwards at UK with a low loader, so he can bring it back, and he says he might just drop it off.
I know who owns it. Good guy.
That means I probably won't have to sleep in a sleeping bag under a bench at Gaydon this September if I get that back. I'll have something to lie in at least, won't I? But I didn't particularly enjoy it when I had it because I'd got Gertie, and, you know, I were out driving Gertie thinking this is proper. And then I go out in that on a weekend with Lucy bouncing around in a Bostrom mechanical seat with a fuller box. God, if this is how it was when I were 20, I'm glad I didn't drive then, but times are great.
It sounds like a decent thing to get back. I'm guessing that you wouldn't want to go down the route of getting yourself another Alpha just to have, because it wouldn't be the same, would it?
No, we've talked about it. Pub talk, you know, we're all sat about at the beginning when it became apparent I won't be able to get mine back. Well, we're going to buy another Alpha, paint it silver and stack it and put jurors on it, and are we going to copy it? You know, I was in lunatic mode. I was going to copy it down last sticker, and then that'll show you. And I thought, you need to get a grip, matey. You need to get a grip quickly. So I got a grip, really. And I had no interest in shows last couple of years. I went to Newark last year because Halty had booked a big corner piece for half a fleet to go sort of job. And he said, you're coming out here, miserable git. And I said, no, well, I don't. Anyway, I did. I went. But, you know, I saw Lucy down there for an hour, and she was there, and it was all right. But I was just a bit like, what's it all about, this? But since all these changes this January, February time, I could be back, really. I could quite easily be persuaded, sure, and maybe become half as annoying as I used to be, which people seem to like it when I'm a pest, so I could, I've been a miserable get. I mean, I'm sorry, but I have been a miserable old bastard for some time, and it kind of becomes the norm, and if you do anything remotely exciting. You seem to have 3 days recovery time. I've just been mourned you. I've driven a lot of people mental. Matt Waller, bless him. I've driven him up the wall on many levels. He's had to listen to some cobblers as that lad. And recently there's a youth at Holt, he's called Brad Clarkson, and he's had his fair share of earache lately as well. And he's given me some fairly good advice for one so young. So cheers, Brad. But you know, I'm through it. Or I'm sick.
I think by the time the clocks go forward at the end of the month, I think you'll be pretty much raring to go to get out to some shows and get back into it and be socialising and all that. I think it's going to be a good year for you. I think good year for truck and driver as well. I think going forward, we've got a lot of stuff lined up. I'm quite excited and looking forward to the show season a lot more than I have the last couple of years. I haven't really been into it since post COVID or anything like that. But yeah, it's looking quite promising. What's all on the go this year?
So, yeah. I'm looking forward to this year. I mean, I look forward to most years generally, but work has just been like a massive flying in the ointment for some years. But now it's just a thing that I do when the kids are at school that makes money appear in the bank. And it's quite a novel concept. And the real thing that singles me out as a simpleton is I'm just ridiculously giddy about the idea of holiday pay. I can't get my head around that.
Yeah, oh, it's nice. Like, I ended up getting that with trucking driver because I was self-employed for a good few years. It's lovely taking a holiday and thinking, oh, no, I'm going to create slack here that I'm going to have to work double hard to get back. Yeah, there's a lot to be said for being employed, I must say.
You know, historically, we go for a fortnight in Abersock every summer and, you know, sort of paddle around. And everybody loves it. We go to the cottage and Abersock's an amazing place. If you've not been, it's just fantastic. And everybody loves it. So they have a great time. And I kind of put this front on that I'm having a great time. But inside, I'm just sat there calculating. I'm thinking all fortnight, thinking, come end of September, I'm going to have $6,000 missing out of this budget because I've had a fortnight buggering about here. And you know, if you're a builder or a plasterer or you know, a double glazing installer, you can crack on and do some weekends and you can soon make that money back up. But in transport, if you week, you've lost a week.
You can't make it back. You can only do so many hours.
And that is pretty much what I've been on with for the last few years, thinking, well, all this has meant is I've spent $3,000 coming here, I've lost $6,000 while I've been here. So essentially, that holiday's, you know, cost me half as much as a new car. And I got to a point where I start thinking of everything cost-wise in litres. You know, I'd be thinking, oh, that's just cost me 500 litres of diesel. And, you know, when we were farming, we used to sort of cost everything out in terms of litres of milk, because obviously milk price dictated everything at the farm. So you'd think, I've just spent £350 on that. You know, that's, you know, quick calculation, that's 1,500 litres of milk we've got to make to get that back. And I got that from Andy at farm, really. He used to think like that as well. But I just don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to be held over a barrel and, you know, made to think that everything's got a cost, everything's got to be paid back, everything's got a price. You know, you enjoy Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you can have a bloody miserable week after. And it's not strictly true, you don't. It's not that simple. You don't lose $6,000 out of the equation because, you know, that's your turnover. Your actual profit on your $6,000 will be 2.5. It's all down to that sort of mentality. You get into a black corner and, you know, all you can see is the negatives. But I'm enjoying it. I'm not causing anybody any bother, I don't think. I'm being fairly pleasant to customers. I'm being fairly pleasant to staff at Holt's. I'm just pootling about and I'm enjoying it.
Wonderful stuff.
There has to be a catch. That's what I'm thinking. You know, you can't be happy without there being a catch, so I'm waiting for a catch. Oh, I know what the catch will be. I've got to submit my final accounts. So I'm pretty bloody sure that the Inland Revenue are going to find a catch. And, you know, as I said earlier, it's easier to start in business than to get out. So I'm positive that I'll have done something. I should have finished in January, not in February, and blah, blah, blah. And therefore you owe us 15 grand and, you know, it'd be one of those jobs. However, even that, I don't care. We'll sort it. We'll, you know, we'll pay whatever tax they want eventually. We'll, but, you know, it's done. It's finished. And I can't tell you how much of a relief it is. And I'm sure there's tens of people that'll be listening to this that have done the same thing.
Yeah, I'm sure. I hope it's striking a chord with the people that are listening to this in one way or another, whether that's through experiencing it themselves or it's something that they're going through at the moment, and maybe it will give them some inspiration as to what to do going forward. You can pull yourself out of a dark and difficult place and get yourself somewhere better. There can be better times on the horizon. So yeah, it's really, really positive.
I'm not being judgmental about these lads that have got it in the blood. You know, the people like Richard Fern, you could cut his leg in half like Blackpool Rock and it'll say haulage. You know, and Stuart Holt, he loves it. It's in his blood. If it's your thing, don't listen to a miserable get like me packing up. Just keep doing what you do.
But if things had worked out different in the world, for example, if you'd been able to keep the Foden, or if Foden had continued to make trucks for more years beyond that, and you could have replaced it with a newer foot, if you're still driving something that you loved, then there's every chance that you may still be owner operating away and being a lot happier with it today. But not having the truck anymore was a fundamental part of what made it what it was that you wanted to do.
So what started it, but it's everything. You know, like they've just reintroduced HGV levy this year, so road tax has just doubled. Just boom, there you go.
Yeah, there's a lot of extra crap that's come down post the pandemic as well. It's not going to get any easier in that respect either. So,
you know, Khan and his ridiculous bloody London. From October, all this nonsense.
More DVS stuff coming in. About $2,500 a throat to go and get your vehicle.
Bugger that! Cyclists, don't ride up the inside of trucks. You don't die. That's a simple message. But no. We'll just fit more cameras on one of these than they have on oil tankers to get into port, just to protect some chopsy, entitled prick in Lycra. No, balls to that. I don't want to be part of this crap anymore. I don't want some clipboard-wielding lemon telling me how to do something I've done for 30 years. Just bugger off. I really don't want to be messing about with a faceless bank anymore. You know, my bank used to be in Penistone. HSBC Bank, and I could go and drop in there on a Friday if I were done early and just go in. And it was a woman from Barnsley, Erica, and she'd just make tea and we'd have a biscuit and I could sort out my overdraft for a year, or, you know, we could just do whatever. Great, fantastic. No, they shut Penistone, so we all retreat to Home Firth, and then, oh, they shut that. So then, if you want to go to the bank, you can't, because you can't get into town, into Huddersfield, in a wagon. So you have to take a day off to go into a bank. And then they move my business bank into Cardiff, because that's an obvious place to put it from Home Firth. So you can't deal with anybody. The only contact I get with bank is once a year, they write to me saying, congratulations, you can keep your overdraft facility for another year. And they charge me £187.50 for saying that in a letter. But it's just that sort of stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is how they were even 10 years ago. It was blokes in overalls and women in offices you could go and see, and you could go talk to a guy who knew your engine inside out, and he'd get a stethoscope out and he'd listen, he'd go, it's loose on number 5, listen, that valve's loose, can you hear it? And you're like, no, but thanks. You know, that's finished. And it's not for me. I mean, John Mills, parts man at B&B, he's been in agricultural tractor job for years as Mills. He's 70, 72, 73, and he's still going strong. And he just looked at me. I was telling him, you know, a tale like this, and Mills, he just looked at me, and he went, do you know what your problem is? And I thought, hey, up, buckle up, I'm going to get one here. And he says, you are an analog man in a digital world.
Yes.
Inhaled
it. That is the title of this episode. I'm going to get that added on to that.
Is John Mill B&B?
That's a song by somebody.
Yeah. He just said, you're an analog man in a digital, and he ate it square on. That's exactly the problem. I've just got this damned iPhone because kids have mocked me into getting one, so I've got one. I don't want one. It makes me tetchy. I was quite all right, my Asda special, but apparently they're not much cop. So here I am with an iPhone. I can't drive. I mean, how long did we fuck about tonight? Oops, sorry, that's swearing. How long did we mess about tonight?
like that's traditionally mattered on this podcast.
Yeah, but we don't generally drop the F-bomb in, do we, so much? But, how much did we bugger about tonight with you trying to Google how I could turn this microphone on in this thing so we could do this? About 10 minutes, because I'm a camera, you know.
I don't know either. I've always had Androids.
If I'd have been done that, no problem. Yeah.
No, it's been good. I hope it's been quite cathartic for you. I hope you've enjoyed coming back on the podcast tonight, so we can get you back on again.
Apart from Doom, because that's all I like doing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll have to get you back on the next one for some completely irrelevant nonsense where we don't even mention trucks for the first 40 minutes.
Yeah, I've got plenty of gibbering we can be on with. Don't panic. Yeah, and like I say, I will actually write this one up for you, and we can have some sort of closing thoughts as a.
Yeah, well, I say I have dug out for because we were doing Manual Week in the magazine, which has gone like massively viral, and I had I've dug out pictures of pretty much every food and a lot of ERFs and trucks that we had featured during my tenure since 2018. So I've got quite a few pictures of your food and from the Team Trucking Driver pages over the years. So we can add some of them in as well. So yeah, that'll be really good. Look forward to reading it.
I watched a video the other day with you interviewing me at Gaydon one year, and I
that would have been bad. My food in there as well.
Yeah, we were standing in front of mine, and you were asking me about something or other. But the bit that I remember most about that video the other day is how I lacked an immense beer belly then.
Yeah, you were on a bit of a health kick then at some point. 2019, everything was going really well in 2019, I think the world was going along just pretty much quite the thing. It was all right. Yeah, but I mean, I remember that you were avoiding drinking lattes and doing quite a few other things during that sort of period of time.
Yeah, well, I hit 40 in 2012 and I had a party like an old agricultural college lot came and somebody videoed me talking. I was, you know, standing over there talking sideways on, and I watched this video back and I'm thinking, oh yeah, so-and-so. It was that fat get there, and I thought, Jesus Christ, it's me. And that were it. I was terrified. So I went into Forrest Gump mode, because I'm a bit that way, you know, it's all a note. I can't fanny about with Weight Watchers and the rest of it. So I just thought, right, that's it. I'm on one. So I stopped sugar. So I was doing two sugars each coffee, 5, 6, 8 coffees a day, so 16 shovelfuls sugar a day. Stopped eating bread for a bit, and I lost 5 stone between August and Christmas, and I got down to about 15 stone, which is thin for me, and it was ace. I loved it. But lockdown happened, and we used to go to work and come home, and Bradfield Breweries would deliver on a Friday a couple of crates of Farmer's Blonde, and then we just sit around on a weekend not doing a great deal, drinking Farmer's Blonde, and suddenly, hey presto, I'm 21 stone again. Yippee. And here we are. But I read the other day that the reason it's not just dropping off this time is because, top side of 45, your metabolism's all different, you know, and it's not your fault. So it's not my fault. I think now I've got some motivation in life generally back, I might actually get off my ass and kick that mountain bike about a bit, and you know, rather than do we have to, I'm gonna just move about a bit and see what happens.
Well, once you get your mind right, everything else will fall into place. Yeah.
But my mind's never been right, has it? Even when it was right, it wasn't right.
If you get your mind right for you.
Yeah. I've never been described as right on any level, but anyway, there you go. No.
Well, you're pretty far right.
I'm far right, yeah, perhaps. I'm happy, you know, long may it continue. Someone will come and bite me in the ass shortly, I'm sure, because that's how it works. But for now, in my metal box on the other side of Sweden, I'm quite happy. Yeah.
So to round things off, just to end the podcast off, where are you tonight and where are you off to round the week off in your 540 Volvo?
I'm wedging up a gate into a Jewson's in, I want to say Kringleford. I think that's where I am. Kringleford, which is apparently a leafy suburb of Norwich. I've got to this Jewson's tonight. And I don't think we're booked in, to be right. And it says on the gate there, in massive letters, supplier deliveries before 10 a.m. must be pre-booked. Whoopsies. Mm. And at the side of me is a posh auction house that does art and furniture and stuff. And then there's me. So I'm a bit like a cork in a bottle here. So I don't know. When they come in at 6 or 7 or whatever time they come in the morning, they're going to be really chuffed to see me. So I've got some roofing slates for this lot in the morning. Then I've got to go find somewhere in Swaffham on the way back up the 47 with 10 ton of fertilizer. And then I've got to call at King's Lynn in a village somewhere out our end of King's Lynn with some corrugated packaging. And then it's northbound and down. So kind of broken its back on here tonight. We've got all the way, you know, got a clean car, get rattling out.
Park the truck up on Friday, pull your car, jump in the truck, go home, forget all about it, enjoy your weekend.
This is the plan, Stan. I've got my dad's birthday next week, so I'll have to go see Grubby weekend.
How old's your dad now?
Will he be 82 this time? 82? Yeah, I think so. 82. Yeah, he's 30 years older than me. So, yeah, he'll be 82.
And he's good stuff.
Still deeply cantankerous.
Well, wonderful stuff. Well, thank you very much for coming on the podcast again, Chris. Great to have you back. Hopefully, get you on regularly again. Now, I mean, you know, the podcast was on hiatus for a good while there at the end of the year. Either I wasn't in a particularly good place, kind of feeling it either. So it's difficult for a lot of people right now. Things aren't all that easy, and you've got to, you know, work things out. And it can take time to come to realizations and make things happen.
Yeah. I've never really been able to realize things. That's my problem. You know, I don't pick up signs really easily. I just keep going on, which is why when Kate's running out of steam and I'm going to get hit with something like a pan or an evil stare, I just keep going. You know, I'm not one of those that picks up body language. I just keep going. So I just keep doing. Bad for me. I just keep doing it because it's what we do. You know, we've always done it, so we'll just keep doing it, despite the fact it's going to end up in a massive heart attack or something. I'll just keep doing it. It's what we do. But I'm determined I'm not going to do that anymore. If it's not right, I'm going to stop bloody doing it. You see, that's what my brother's like. He's completely different with chalk and cheese. If you meet my brother, you'd never think we were related. He's that laid back. He's nearly dead. You know, you could put a sheet over him like a budgie because you think he's passed on, but he's just that chilled out. He'll be just contemplating everything that's gone wrong at dinner. He'll just be sort of humming quietly to himself in a chair, you know, like jazz club. Whereas I'm shouting and bawling and throwing furniture about and getting a proper wobbler on. He's just like, chill out, you prick. So, you know, we're chalk and cheese, but I always thought he would have a bit of a lightweight for all that kind of, let them do what they want. I'm not interested. So it's a waste. How can you let people do this? But he's a lot happier than I've been. I've just been shouting and bawling and fighting invisible shit for years. For what? To get an ulcer and not sleep a great deal. Bollocks to that. I'm just going to try and take advice from people for a change. And so far, all advice seems to be coming from the same direction and all of it seems to be good. So it does make you think, really, that when I've been telling everybody that they're just talking bollocks for all these years, they've actually been spot on, and I've just been at odds with everybody. Everybody at one time or another, I've been at odds with everybody. You know, I'm not one side or other. I'm, you know, whatever side you're on today, I'll be on opposite side just because that's how it is. You know, So, yeah. Take advantage.
Great stuff.
Wherever you are, while it lasts.
Fantastic. Right. I will catch up with you again soon. You take care. Have a great day tomorrow and a great weekend. Same goes out to everybody else listening to the podcast. Have a great time, whatever it is that you're doing. Take care. Catch you again soon.
Shalom.
Thank you for tuning in to the Truck and Driver podcast, proudly sponsored by TomTom. As a special thanks to our listeners for trucking through the holiday season, we're giving away 1 month free of TomTom Go Navigation Truck. Simply download the Go Navigation app and use the code TRUCKYEAH. That's TRUCKYEAH when subscribing. Safe travels, folks.